to I Am the Knight, a history of the Caped Crusader. My name is Grant Watson. This is Damien McGee, Zoe Wadsworth, and Travis. I've forgotten your surname. How Travis? I've known for years. I've gone blank.
Just the Trav.
The Trav. Trav man.
I am the Knight.
The Travelator.
Oh, God.
The road well traveled.
Obviously, it's a panel about Batman. The main reason I sort of threw this one together, because I was very interested in why Batman's so successful. Probably the only superhero you could claim is more successful than Batman is Superman in terms of popular iconography, but in terms of
cinema,
box office, success on television, Batman's pretty much the number one show in town. So I wanted us to kind of have a look at why that is. What makes him such a sort of a popular iconic character, in particular what makes his villain so popular. Batman's one of the few superheroes where the average person on the street who's never even read a Batman comic, you can say, name three Batman villains and they could probably do it off the top of their head. You could say, name five and most people could do it. It's very unusual. Most superheroes, you might be able to name one villain, a lot of them you can't name any. The easiest way I thought to do that was to basically look at Batman from a historical perspective, to basically go through the decades, each main sort of loose period of Batman, what got introduced to the character in the comics and in the films and TV shows during those times, and hopefully get some kind of picture about it. In a broader comic, Detective Comics, like...
Got a weird cape out of that, wasn't
it? Well, it's meant wings. It was originally designed as wings. It took them a while to get the characters designed to the step.
Well, remember, one of the inspirations was Da Vinci's work on flying machines, so they wanted a kind of web wing thing.
And, of course, when Batman appeared in Australia, it was always in the daily strips, and that's the only way we actually got to see the... Batman that way. Comics didn't come out until much, much later on. I think in the late 50s and early 60s, where you had not comics like that, but the big black and white comics. And that's what I used to collect, is just mainly those big DC black and white multiple stories, which is really great, but you can't get them anymore. And run through mine out.
Many of us had mums who did that. My mum sent my fan collection to Vietnam.
I'd just like to make it very clear, given that she's in the room, my mum and my mum never threw anything out of my house. Although she did once lose my childhood teddy bear, I'm still waiting for it to come home.
Grant, which one's your mum?
This is Batman's first appearance. I was saying, Detective Comics started off, like most comics in the period, as an anthology, so it would be a whole series of short, you know, strips. Sometimes with recurring characters, but generally they were considered once-off, because convention characters put them on. If they're particularly popular, they bring them back a couple of times. Batman was quite unusual in that the character was so popular that within about, I think it was 6 issues, he'd pretty much taken over the whole of Detective Comics. And this comic in particular became so popular that when National Periodicals changed their company title, they changed it to DC Comics after Detective Comics. So they're actually a company called Detective Comics Comics.
And that's why, if you look at the old Superman TV series, that will have the old DC name. Mm. So, just in case you're wanting to know.
But, I love that image. It's a very, because this is very early days for superheroes. I think it's the only one that predate Batman, really, Superman, and before that, the Phantom, if you include the Phantom. Mm.
superhero. Thankfully, we sent Trevor Clark to England for Gov, so he's not here to tell me the fact of his birth. But yeah, it's just such a different character in what was basically crime stories in this comic, to suddenly have this guy who was dressing up in a costume and, you know, flying around on the rooftops on
it's really, really Pulp Fiction in another version. I mean, Batman was similar to the Shadow, and in that sort of vein in the 30s and 40s.
The Shadow would have been an influence on Batman, surely.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
There's actually a researcher who a couple of years ago found a specific issue of the Shadow magazine that they ripped off the first Batman
The only other major part of Batman's entire backstory is in this first issue is because they don't name the city, he doesn't have a Batcave, they don't really know much about him, he doesn't have a butler named Alfred. The only other element that's sort of stuck from the first issue is that they did name the police commissioner Jim Gordon. So that's basically the start of Batman, it's just Batman and Gordon. And of course, at this point, Gordon was a plot side, but he was just there to basically go, my, there's crime going on, if only someone could see us. There wasn't even a bat signal at this point.
How did
you
introduce
that? Sorry? How did you introduce that?
This is the next major change to the title. Oh, we found
Robin. And you can also see, I mean, this is, I can't remember what it is, what's this? So the first appearance of Batman is May 1939, this is April 1940, you can already see the costume for Batman is pretty much settled down. The ears aren't quite so big and wide. And
the numbers completely consecutive?
Yeah.
So this is 11 comics later.
Yes.
What's
happening to his head's turn?
What's up with that?
But yeah, Robin, I don't know if you guys want to talk to the appeal of Robin as a concept.
I don't think Robin is actually very appealing myself.
He's awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
why is Robin so awesome?
Well, it gives something to roll. These are aimed at children, right? It gives someone the kids want to be as a kid.
There's a great Batman comic from about 3 or 4 years ago, and of course I now can't remember which one it was or who wrote it, but it made the best comment about why Robin, I think, exists, which is that in your standard sort of back alley Gotham City crime fighting situation, Batman exists to scare the crap out of the villain and the mugger and make them fear for their lives and never commit a crime again. Robin's there, younger, brighter, more colourful, to reassure the victim who's like lying on the ground going, oh my god, what's happening? At that point, not everything's bad, it's all going to be okay. Well, this is that idea that one of them signifies fear and the other one signifies hope, which I just thought was a really nice way to sort of portray that dynamic.
Well, there's a narrative reason why Robin exists, and that's because Batman being the world's greatest detective would just figure shit out. It's like, oh yeah, I got you, bang. But Robin, being a kid, wouldn't know. So he'd be like, holy fill in the blank, Batman. What are we going to do about this? And he'd be like, well, Robin, we're going to do this with the back computer and bang. Well, so that's why Robin exists. But also on a practical level, and I blame Frank Miller for this, but we'll get to that later. You know how Batman's got that big sort of gold... Yeah. Like that! Folks. Just, yeah, that's where the thickest level of Kevlar is. Okay, so bad guys will just shoot at that. Whereas Robin, who's dressed in bright primary colors and is a trained acrobat, you know, bad guys will shoot at that.
Whereas,
whereas that thing just can't be hung.
The thing that's interesting is, particularly a lot of them, you know, hardcore comic fans generally have very mixed feelings about Robin, but the thing to look at in terms of its historical context is Robin was so ridiculously popular within about a year, every single superhero had a teen sidekick.
Absolutely.
Except for, I think, the Superman, but they just made teen Superman and called it Superboy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
The
Adventures
of Superman.
That's true. That Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen was a comic that ran for 20 odd years, from like the 40s through the 50s.
Well, I didn't mean
that's
a comic, I just mean
that's a... But I'll just call the title Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen. It was a huge seller.
There was even briefly a comic, Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane.
Oh, yes, it was. I only lasted one issue.
That's crazy.
Well, during the 50s, we also had the Batman serials in the movies.
Yeah.
And that really, and young kids seeing their favourite superhero on the big screen coming week after week really did something really, you know, showed more popular than what Batman was. The first serial was actually, they don't show it anymore simply because it's very,
it's all that evil Japanese
video. It's very
racist.
Racist, yes, that's the word I was looking for.
Came out about 45, by any chance?
And during the, around about 40. Well, 43 actually.
Oh, even worse.
But then, of course, in 49 we had the second Batman serial, which is what most people will remember about the Wizard, which is one of the ones that I remember watching on TV. First time I saw that was 1969.
I was kind of interesting in the Batman serials that by that point in the mid-40s there was already so many famous Batman villains and yet they didn't use any of them in the
No, they used the, you know, the Wizard was quite interesting, but I think...
There's an audience member to work out who he was.
Yeah, I think towards the end of the serial it got really let down as it was a twin.
It ain't the young children,
though. Sure. And, you know, and like I said, when I first saw it, it was on TV with Fred Beck Breakfast of Go-Go at 7 o'clock, so that was really cool. So...
okay, obviously, up here is Spring 1940. The Batman was selling so well, they set up what was originally a quarterly comic. It was much thicker, I think it was about 60 pages per issue. It was titled Batman. And they had several stories in each issue. And issue one was quite famous for having one story that introduced the Joker and another one which introduced Catwoman. First sort of
no, it's still
famous levels of stuff. Sorry?
It was still under 10 cents.
Only 10 cents. Only 40 times as much.
The Detective Comics, which was smaller than 10 cents, and this one, the bigger one, is still under 10 cents.
People save up their pennies
for 3 months to buy a
comic. There's a jump for a bit. Batman 49. There's a Joker.
Oh, that's very
nice. Meet the real thief of Baghdad, the Joker, in Batman's Arabian.
Oh,
jeez. So there is that. The only color of the great. But yeah, the Joker. He is the ultimate comic book villain. There has never been, I don't think there's ever going to, there can at this point ever be another villain character in a sort of pulp comic book setting that's ever going to be as effective as...
The closest you're going to get to is Magneto in terms of his opposition, his diametric philosophical opposition to the main character. Because, it's order versus chaos, it's the duality of personality. It's just, quite frankly, it's fucking amazing. And I honestly do not think that the writer at the time, which would have still been Bill Finger?
Bill Finger's pretty much
put that much thought into it. I think it's luck, it's chance, it's lightning in a bottle.
Because certainly the, I don't know.
Don't get me wrong, I love Max von Sydow and Queen.
The thing that I personally really like about the Joker is it's the point where they find it, and it takes them probably a couple of decades to sort of get it completely nailed down, to be honest. But once he's introduced, they start working towards this wonderful sense of duality all through Batman. And this is sort of the first key one where suddenly your hero is this guy who dresses in dark colours and hangs around in the shadows and is really kind of grim, and your villain is a clown. And so it's basically taking... Because this is like early 1940s. This is before clowns were creepy and everyone hates them. Mm. Before it was acceptable for us all to hate clowns. So it was a big twist. It's like, here's your villain, he's a clown. I think the next big change for this character is kind of in the 70s when they really start Denny O'Neill was the writer and Neil Adams was drawing, and they did a comic called The Five-Way Revenge.
Yeah.
And it's the first one where they basically say, well, actually the Joker's a rampaging psychopath, and they make him genuinely quite serious. And that's kind of when that whole relationship's completed. But
on a personal level, that's one of the first Batman comics I remember reading. I got that in a Murray Comics anthology. Yeah. Oh, I remember Murray Comics.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I got it in the Fleetway 1984 Batman.
Hang on. Do I have that? Did that have a tech story by Alan Moore? Or was that the 1985 one?
Yeah, The 1986 one has a tech story by a very young Grant Morrison.
Oh, bitch. He carried that thing through, did he?
That's for another fan.
He's just showing the reason why clowns aren't
out
here.
The main thing about clowns is that they're wearing a mask. You know, they put on face paint and they don't act like a normal person. And that automatically makes someone less identifiable, if you like, because the moment you put on a mask, you're free to do things that you wouldn't normally do.
Well, they're so creepy, aren't they?
Well, I just remember one of the inspirations for the Joker was an old Universal horror movie starring Conrad Veidt called The Man Who Laughs.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a very nice photo looking just with some maniacal smile.
Yeah.
They use as photo reference. Pretty much exactly like that, actually.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, without the term.
But, he's a great villain. And then, The Dark Knight, last year, there's the scene in the interrogation room.
Yeah.
With, Batman slam the Joker's head into the desk, and the Joker's going on about, I don't want to kill you, don't you understand, you complete me. It's very romantic.
I think you and I are going to do this forever.
Yeah.
Don't think so, dude.
Sorry, pal.
I was wondering how many minutes it was going to take before we got to an off-color joke about Heath Ledger having died.
There are no off-color jokes about Heath Ledger.
But that nailed that relationship, that fantastic co-dependent relationship between Batman and the Joker, where if the Joker didn't keep breaking out of prison and threatening to kill lots of people, Batman really wouldn't have as much to do. And the only reason the Joker does it, really, when you get down to it, is because he really, really enjoys giving Batman the shit.
I think the real thing with Batman Joker was it wasn't to begin with, it was more when it moved towards the Dark Knight side of things, which they started getting to the relationship being the line between Batman and the line between the Joker. It really wasn't a line, it kept blurring between the two of them.
Sometimes they were so parallel. Yeah,
that's what made him such a great villain, and I think why some people also like Batman as well, is because he's not true to Justice the American Way. He's flawed and broken, and his villains are the same.
Yes, Danny.
There was just a fabulous little documentary on, I think it was one of the DC releases of one of the superhero lines, Justice League or something like that, with someone talking about the Joker and the character of the Joker. And the bit I loved in it the most, where I thought they'd actually nailed the character of the Joker beautifully, was to them, the Joker had figured out that Bruce Wayne was Batman years ago, but if he told anyone, including Batman, this, it wouldn't be funny anymore.
It's just one of those things that I love. But it's that sort of thing. Yeah, Batman broods about all these things, and broods about keeping his secret. If the Joker's going to keep the secret, he's only going to do it because it's funny.
That sounds plausible to me.
Beautiful planetary comic strip where the planetary team, they kind of jump through dimensions every time, and it changes the dimensional guy, and they keep jumping into an area with soil.
Different version of Batman
from the incredibly camp 1970s version of 1950s TV series that it was, to the incredibly dark and dangerous one with giant robotic tape that he sticks on people. Sort of more normal ones, the detective, but they just keep on jumping back to the
That one was really creepy.
Sorry.
That's all right. It was a jaunty joke.
Catwoman.
It's a
swampy
art.
Actually, I actually really like Catwoman.
There's a comic coming out. There's a comic coming out in June called Siren of Gotham that stars Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and
I think Harlequin.
And you've got to check out the cover. Like, go to dccomics.com and check out the cover issue one, because it makes this look chaste. It's the most cheesecakey, porny cover. I felt so guilty ordering it.
They did the same thing with Oracle. I'm buying that and going, it looks like I'm buying corn. What the hell?
All the software is like, she's just wearing civilian clothes and a wheelchair, and every cover gets a beanie.
Yeah, or they got one shot where the camp, like the shot's taken from up and you can see her bra underneath her shirt.
It's fun. DC, keep it fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, the other one from Batman issue one is Catwoman, is the other probably second most famous Batman novel.
Oh, yeah.
It's just something, I don't know, something really transgressive about Catwoman. I mean, you can see there, it's basically got these walks, you know, walking, you know, fetish, just like the wigs, the boots, whatever.
I know, it's just really, the character just really captures the essence for an 8-year-old, yes.
She's also a classic B-movie bad girl.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Back in the 50s and even early 60s, you would get strong, empowered, sexually aware women who weren't good guys, because they couldn't be good guys. But they were pretty fucking cool. And bang, there you go.
Because the other thing in the 40s is they introduced Vicki Vale, who's the, love interest, and she's kind of a good girl, so it's a very sort of classic theme of you think that's a good
girl. It's that whole Betty and Veronica thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Batman is Archie. Which would make Judge Ed Robin.
And Reggie's the Joker. And Principal Weatherby is Jim Gordon.
This is playing hot dogs.
That's the backhand, man. Fucking work with me here.
Basically, going through the 40s, I mean, I just... you've got a handy cheat sheet there, you can see. June 1940 issues, Clayface. Actually, it's all winter 1940 issue of Batman to actually name Gotham City. That takes them over a year. Before then, it was just Batman named it. It was just an urban environment.
The city.
I got it. Scarecrow is an interesting villain because Batman operates with fear. That's, you know, his modus operandi. That's his prime weapon, really, apart from being a billionaire genius martial arts killing machine.
You can tell I was reading that.
Gotham and Gaslight, where Scarecrow gets his own gas, and it's what could he possibly be afraid of? And then the next page is the full thing, and it's all fluffy bunnies.
No, that's not Gotham by Gaslight. That's Judgment on Gotham.
Batman versus Judge Dredd.
Well, I feel there's about 20 years till we hit something interesting.
I think most people will know.
Did you
mention
the Comics Code of America?
Yeah, that comes in. I was just going to quickly jump to the rest of the 40s. The Penguin, who's running somewhere. The Penguin's a weird character. There was one of the few ones that Bob Kane personally created. And because Bob Kane was the artist, and Bill Finger was the writer. And by all rights, Batman should be credited by Bill Finger and Bob Kane.
Whereas Bob Kane died a rich man, and Bill Finger was knife in a gun.
Pretty much. And the same deal happens. Everyone remembers Stan Lee as the creator of Spider-Man, but not Steve Ditko. Everyone remembers Stan Lee as the creator of
Everything
else on.
Yeah. And Jack Kirby for not everything else.
Isn't it a very colourful, sorry,
he didn't seem very deep in terms of creation, so when he came up with a villain, he basically said, ah, it's a bird guy. Wouldn't that be great? So, and he also apparently created it because he was worried that with things like the Joker and Catwoman and the crime stories and Batman being the personality that Bill Finger was writing, he was worried the comics would get a bit too dark and gloomy, so he deliberately wanted to invent a villain who was a bit zanier, a bit funnier, the kids would find entertaining and lighter, so
he invented the Penguin. Right. And now we're stuck with it.
But like I said, I do love what Tim Burton did to the Penguin in Batman and the
That's the first lot of Batman I ever saw was Batman Returns.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad bought it for my 8-year-old sister. I turn 8, I get Charlie's Chocolate Factory, she gets Batman movies.
But yes, the 1960s.
I think the 1960s Batman
really
put Batman on the mark, and also.
That's just like, I can't remember when Seduction of the Innocent came out. 54. Sorry? 54, yeah. Because Batman is very light. Because a guy called Frederick Worms, who's a psychologist, wrote Seduction of the Innocent, which was a book all about how, there's another 40s villain. He wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent, it was all about how comics were incredibly depraved, and are ruining the youth of America, and are far, far from violent, and are making kids violent. And Dad is sexualized, making kids think about sex. And he goes into this chapter in depth with illustrations about how the folds of Batman's cape have been deliberately drawn to look like vaginas. With much evidence of, just folds of cape in black and white. Which says a lot more about Frederick Wortham than it does about Batman. But it caused a major stir, and they introduced what was called the Comics Code Authority, which basically started regulating this is what you can and can't do in an American comic book. And it basically meant that all the horror comics were incredibly, all the most successful comics.
They all went.
Most of the hardcore crime comics all went. You could never see a villain get away with a crime as well.
Couldn't see a kill.
Yeah.
You couldn't see anyone die in a panel. It's basically the reason the comics just sucked for about 20 years.
So this is what you got in Batman from the comics guy came in. You Batman isn't an Earth man at all. He's from another world. The alien Batman. So you see this little logo up here.
Yeah.
As you know, it's been approved by the comics guy.
Was that sort of where you started to begin the whole man-band sort of
thing?
Yeah. A little bit. Did anyone actually like the Riddler?
No.
Okay, we got one guy. All right,
moving on.
Yeah. No. Well, the 1960s certainly, I think, with the TV series, helped heighten the awareness of Batman. I mean, I remember when I was a child, I had a Batman outfit, plastic helmet, and a Batman tin car. They used to go down the street and annoy all the neighbours.
Did you actually do the scene as you cycled?
Yeah, I did. And had horns and everything, and the neighbours complained that the strange boy from is doing his strange thing again.
Did you get beaten?
No, I didn't. I pedaled too hard. Then I switched
atomic batteries to power.
Switched costumes to my Batman, to my Superman costume, and had a and put on my skates and rolled down the hill.
The thing I find interesting about it, because the 66 TV series starring Alan West,
very candid.
Everyone kind of holds that as what went wrong with Batman. You know, a lot of people hate it because it got very bright, it got very candid, it got very big power. Holy, this Batman, very helpful. And a lot of people say, oh, well, that destroyed Batman for decades, because then the comics got really silly, and, you know, until Alan Moore and Frank Miller coming on to put it back on track, and that's all wrong. The reason why the Batman TV series of 66 was the way it was is because that's the only way they could sell a Batman TV series at that time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The one mystery, everything else on TV is on DVD. Why is not the 60s Batman TV series on
the TV? Because Fox owns the rights to the television series and Warner Bros. Owns the rights to Batman.
apparently was a guardianship for the
Watchmen. Yes, there's a rumour that that's actually the real reason why Fox sued Warner Brothers over the Watchmen movie.
And of course, and of course, during the 60s, of course, there's lots of amount of stuff that came, merchandise that came out with the TV series, like these original bubblegum cards. I bought them when they were 20 cents a pack in 1966. So, and that's all I got. That's all I got left of my collection. And of course, when this movie came out, they actually published a movie version, and that's also from 1966. So that's been with me since.
One of the things they did in the 50s, when Seduction of the Innocent kind of changed the whole thing, is because Werther made a taste for Bat-Hound, I wish he'd come back.
What about Batmite?
Batmite is actually in the Batman of the Future TV series.
Yes, Batman, yeah. Thank you. Batman Beyond.
Depends on whether it's American or
true. No.
He's a great name.
Nice job.
Oh, there's Batmite. Yeah.
Batmite in the fifth dimension.
That's the
magic insult. But there was concern. Once the actual innocent came out, one of the many allegations that made specifically about Batman was that Batman and Robin were obviously homosexual and they were promoting homosexuality because there was no female figure in Wayne Manor.
Yeah.
And so the way the comics fixed this is they turned Alfred into a villain for a storyline. He went under mind control and became a master villain, and in the end he died, and I think a rock fall from memory. Alfred died.
And then they bring up
Aunt Harriet.
Because an old aunt living with Bruce and Dick didn't make them seem gay at all. they're now like, quick Rob, we've got to go back before our aunt gets this.
And their aunt taking out with liberation. Didn't have anything.
So yeah, no. One of the things that happened when the TV series became really successful in 66 is, of course, they put Alfred in the TV show, which meant that suddenly Alfred got to come back to life.
For no reason whatsoever.
It was totally like that episode of The Simpsons, the Bible stories.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Ralph, I thought you were dead. Nope. I'm glad they kept Alfred, because Alfred is one of my favourite characters.
Yes.
In any version of that. I particularly like what Michael Caine produced.
Hell yes.
Here's the other main influence from the TV series.
The Batgirl. Yeah.
There was originally a Batgirl, but she was the niece of Batwoman.
Yeah.
In the comic.
Yeah, in the 40s. Mm-hmm. So this was the second Batgirl.
She's still around as Flamebird now.
They didn't fight the Flamebird Earth, so it all kind of went haywire.
Oh, yeah.
Because there is a new Batwoman as well.
But, yeah, in the TV series, I don't think Batgirl actually really worked that well in the TV series.
Well, they only brought it in, like, the second or third season?
Yeah.
Yeah, third
season. They were all sort of trying to fix flagging ratings, but yes. It didn't work.
You have to see the reunion film.
Return to the Batcave.
I've never seen
it. It's a hoot. It's a hoot.
I hate the 60s
Batman. I love King Shark. And it lives in a gothic mansion with a bowl. It has a bowl. It's an Adam.
I love this. This is another example of what it's like. What are you getting at? He's going to spy on his back on his cape. Batman, where? In 24 hours, you'll be dead. That's slightly unusual because I'm sneaking up.
Well, thank God I'm the world's greatest detective.
But Gordon, detective. How many seasons did the show go for?
Three.
Because after it back, sales for the Batman comics just tanked. Like, no one bought the comic anymore.
Yeah, it just took another while for the comic. But then, of course, they did, in the early 70s, a lot of animated Batman.
Mm.
Which also happened. Hell,
Superman started in 73.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was Batman and Robin, voiced by different actors. And then they got Adam West and Dick Ward back to doing the voices. And that's when they reintroduced Batmite in the series, as well as Batgirl and God.
Well, this is June 1970. which is where they basically, because nothing was working, and they were about to cancel the Batman comics because they just weren't selling. The editor Julius Schwartz hired a writer called Denny O'Neill and an artist called Neil Adams.
Just picture that for a second, though.
Yeah.
What if they hadn't got these guys? And we'd all be sitting around going, "Hey, do you remember Batman?
That old TV show?"
Yeah, you remember that shit? Yeah, that was cool.
Wouldn't you watch the movie of Batman and make $1 billion?
Yeah. Actually, do you remember? Just quickly, do you remember Mark Miller just being a? It's a word that rhymes with bunt. Mark Miller. Everyone knows Mark Miller. Yeah. He writes comics. Around April Fool's, about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, I just read the whole big article about Orson Welles.
Orson Welles' Batman. Everyone remember that?
It's huge. If you haven't seen it, look it up. It's Orson Welles' Batman. You did this huge fake article about Orson Welles' planned 1940s film of Batman.
And they had shot test footage, and it was like...
They designed drawings in the article, and it was all fake.
And you had the casting down as well, because it was like, I know...
Rathbone was someone.
Yeah, Rathbone was the Joker. And Atticus Finch worked with me here.
Gregory Peck
was Batman. And there's a whole nine yards.
Yeah, really, really well.
And it was so detailed. And I remember reading at the time and just like, I'm going to go beat off. And you know, it was all bullshit. So if I ever meet Mark Miller, that motherfucker is gone.
I think I was going to say, this is Neil Adams' art. This is obviously the introduction of Man Bat, another great Batman version. It's a more obvious one, perhaps. But the art style has changed so radically once Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams take over, and suddenly it's a lot grimmer, it's a lot more realistic, and there are no jokes in the spirit of Batman, it's just it's all dark.
But it's also more supernatural.
Robert turns to dust, you know, like it's dark imagery.
I guess it's supernatural.
This is my favourite. Batman becomes said, "No, to Robin, Batgirl, Superman, and all those near and dear to me, shortly I will take gun in hand and put an end to what has become a meaningless life, a life without honor, signed the Batman."
Oh, that's
good fruit. So this is kind of the peak of the dark, gritty Batman.
Heavy thinking. That's what I call it.
I love the
point. Yeah, this is really this period up to about the mid-80s. This is going to be the period where they kind of finally solidified Batman as a franchise, if you like. They finally got all the characters where they needed to be. They finally got, you know, the character relationships right. The Joker was perfected in the Joker's Five-Way Revenge. Ra's al Ghul was probably the most famous villain introduced during this period in 71. He's just a fantastic villain, a very 70s villain. By the 70s, got very morally ambiguous. If you look at the popular films in the scene in the early 70s, and you know, Martin Scorsese started directing films and things like Midnight Cowboy and everything, something that's darker and grimer and more morally complex. And I love that Batman kind of reflects that at that point.
Mm.
And I think it's a kind of a murkiness that they've never really managed to shake loose from the comic scenes. I don't think any period after this, everything's basically a variation on this, you know. And towards the end of this period, they changed Dick Grayson. Dick quit being Robin to become Nightwing. And I saw him go, "And this was his new costume!" But no, there we go. It's kind of actually ridiculous. But,
he's not a bad costume.
He becomes Nightwing. He quits being, fights with Batman, quits being Robin, becomes Nightwing.
No more bullet catching for me.
I love the
thing. That's
I've actually got the very first new Teen Titans book at home somewhere. It's very battered, but it's complete angst fest. All five characters are the most angsty, depressed teenagers ever. And then you look at the new TV series. And they're all really cheerful and joking.
Well, she's talking about Batman, the Brave and the Bold. Yeah, that's really cool. I find that very, very funny and refreshing after the other animated series, really dark and...
I did have the comic where Dick Grayson becomes Nightwing, and it's a Teen Titans thing, and he's like, "I'm taking this from Batman, and I'll wear him black and beat motherfuckers up, alright." But he takes the name Nightwing from... There were two super identities that...
in the bottled city of Kandor.
In Kandor, yes. And it was like Firebird and Nightwing. And I'm taking this from Superman. And I'm still going to beat motherfuckers up. That's it. That's his whole thing.
There's Ralph, anyway.
Same point.
Yeah. They figured that Batman still needed Robin. The only, but he became the teen one, though, because they were making him older. But yeah, this is the new Robin the Boy Wonder. This is why, after he was Robin the Teen Wonder, introducing Robin the Boy Wonder, that's right, he said Boy Wonder. They got a second Robin. His character called Jason Solomon. And it was kind of following that same thing. They decided they wanted to make a Robin who was darker and more rebellious. And
well, they started off making him exactly the same as Dick Grayson, though, but blonde.
Yeah, and then they did Crisis in the Universe, and yeah, that's the point of it. Like, now he's Batman Mitchell, and he's trying to steal the hubcaps off the Batmobile, I think.
Yes.
You can't kick from the street, and of course it's one of those sort of, I suppose, artistic backfires where everything they did to make him seem tough and rebellious just made him come across like a jerk.
Well, rather silly, isn't
it? Very, I think it's because if you have a character, I don't know what you guys think, but if you have a character who's really rebellious and you want to make him really dark and mean, it's really hard to do that when you're standing next to Batman.
It's like Patrick, isn't it, really?
It is.
I'm so young and angry and rebellious. I'm going to go beat some people up. Okay.
So, because it's a fantastic, not remotely tacky thing, because Jason Todd was just not very popular at all. So,
that's one reason why they killed him off.
I was like, in 88, they didn't just kill him off. They killed him off by a phone-in poll.
Democracy.
Dial this number if you want Robin to live. Dial this number if you think he should die.
It was 365,000 to 3.
No, it actually wasn't.
No, it was quite tough.
It was a really, really narrow change in votes.
But a lot of comics creators at the time have just gone, what? But we don't care what the readers want.
It's a very, very cynical way of writing.
Yeah. Is this
the
Comics
Code,
or is that
gone away? No, it is. That's the logo there. Yeah, the Comics Code
slackens. Approved.
It's slackened.
It's here. It's very small. You can see. You're allowed to bar 12-year-olds.
No sex.
It's very small.
It's influence diminished. It's become more, like all censorship and classification, becomes more and more permissive as time goes on, and audiences get used to a broad range of topics and subject matter. They tend to loosen out. Until you get conservative governments, now they often try to pull them back up again.
How's your internet?
I'm so confused.
Okay, are we talking
about fabulous characters like the Cagey Beast?
Oh yeah.
They pushed this guy so hard. Ted Knight the Beast, they pushed. Because this was after, we've actually jumped Frank Miller, I'm sure, so I'm going to get in trouble in a second. Batman Year One was a really, really big hit. They wanted to have another big hit.
Yes,
Batman Year Two.
That's the issue.
Batman Year Two is fucking terrible.
And so this was another big attempt to really push something. Yeah, the KGB. Trying to assassinate Ronald Reagan.
Perestroika! Watch!
Hey! So we'll jump back. There we go.
That's great.
It's March 1986. Has anyone here not read this or heard this or know about it?
You are
fucking kidding.
The Blue Owl is like 20 something years old. It's old now.
You're 20 something years old.
I am.
It's a 4-issue miniseries, but like big, chunky issues, kind of like small paperbacks. And it's set decades into the future, where basically an old, grizzled Bruce Wayne comes out of retirement.
And there are no superheroes left.
Yeah, and Superman's become a CIA stooge. Beautiful. He works for the government now.
And it's, I believe the technical term is the shit. It is fucking fantastic.
And it's the thing I like about the most is it kind of takes a lot of parts of Batman's mythology to a different extreme. So, you can see it, and you can't really see it very well in the silhouette. I should have got my better colour, because issue 2 really shows it. Bruce Wayne in Dark Knight Returns, he isn't muscular, he's like the Incredible Hulk.
He's huge.
He's like 5 feet. The arm is so exaggerated. It's this massive, hulking bit of muscle, which is just Bruce
Wayne. It was just because it's well up there in the Dark Knight Returns. what was it? Was it Frank Miller? Was there from Four Winds? It was that crossover from Batman to The Dark Knight.
No. Dark Knight started getting used as a term by Danny O'Neill in the early 70s. In that darkening period, we talked about we started at The Dark Knight because he apparently just didn't like the term Caped Crusader. He thought that was too candy and sunshine.
Mm. So, what happened to Robin in this incarnation of Batman? Sorry, I just thought we should have
to do
a
Dory
jumping dick circle from the audience.
Are you talking
about Carrie
Kelly or?
Well, the character of Robin in Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns.
Something was so special about it.
Something happened to Dick Grayson, didn't he? No, it's Jason Todd was dead and he was all angsty, yeah.
Which actually.
I don't find Dark Knight Returns all that interesting.
The Jason Todd death. Yeah. Because they don't talk about Dick. But in dialogue in the comic, Alfred says to Batman, like, what about Jason? And he just says, Jason was a good soldier and he honored me. And you never find out in that narrative what happened.
Which was
a podcast. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And then Frank Miller started doing crack.
Actually, the other thing Frank Miller did after this was they hired him to do Batman Year One, which is basically retelling Batman's first year.
Actually, yeah, that is
great. And that, I actually think that's the best thing Frank
Miller. I think that's brilliant. Yeah. We read it.
I think the sign of how good it was that about 80% of it was stolen wholesale and turned into Batman Begins. So, shot composition is out of the comic.
Absolutely.
And that really, I mean, by retelling the origin in a very specific way, it really allowed them to sort of reset the character definitively.
Well, it introduces Catwoman, Selina, and so like her origin, very briefly.
They turn her into a prostitute, don't they?
Yeah,
that's what she is. Dominatrix.
Yes. And thousands of cats. Not thousands. But it also shows that Gotham City is actually a really corrupt city as well. The police are not, if you wouldn't trust the police for anything.
Yeah, I'll start off with Gordon as a lieutenant. He sort of showed him working his way up through the
ranks. Yeah.
Well, you get him coming in from Chicago as a formerly corrupt cop. He is pretty much the main character of that story.
Well, there's actually two narratives.
Yeah.
It's Bruce Wayne's narrative and there's Jim Gordon's narrative.
All of them coming together.
Yeah, exactly. And towards the end, you know, him saying, well, we've got this strange guy back, the Joker coming, and there's someone.
Also, you get from that, and this is because DC just reboots shit about once every, I don't know, 6 months. Well, I don't look like this now, but in Year One, which I believe is still canon.
Yeah,
possibly. Jim Gordon, it's implied that Jim Gordon knows who Batman is.
Well, he sort of like worked it out who may be the vigilante.
Well, no, because you get that scene when Bruce Wayne saves his kid jumping off the bridge and Gordon's got his glasses off and he just says to him, it's like, you know, without my glasses on, I can't see a fucking thing.
Hmm.
But so if you take that as canon, Gordon's always known.
Only got a few minutes left. I'm just throwing this up. The third Robin, well, the third main Robin, if you include the Batman, Batman Returns one, and this is the fourth. But yeah, in the main continuity, this is Tim Drake, who I think is the best version.
Yeah.
And I think Nasty Vision is one of the movies recently.
What?
Captured by the Joker and brainwashed and
cut. Oh, that's the Batman.
I think
the
film.
Return of Jersey, yeah.
And they had two different versions of that. They had the censored version and the uncensored version.
Yeah.
Been trying to get a copy of the uncensored version.
He's a great character. That's the problem. Before she becomes Gordon briefly. He's a much more. Comics are all more complicated, I suppose, now. They're all more complex. They allow characters to have more dimensions than they used to in the old days. He's allowed to be a much more sort of doubtful. So, you know, he can have self-doubt and he can have personal troubles that aren't in a sort of a soap opera 1980s teen titans kind of way. He's got an interesting thing where they set up really close relationships between him and a whole range of other sort of teen characters
and then
that killing all of those friends. And we hit that point where I think within the space of about 6 months worth of comics, his best friend Superboy had died. And then his father got killed, and then a year after
His father got killed, he's got no recourse from that, because, you know, it's not really a cool death. It's not a good motivation, because even when eventually he will become Batman or whatever, it's like, why do you do this? Because my father got killed.
Who killed your father?
Captain Boomerang.
Really? Jesus Christ, buy a gun, don't you know? So who killed your father? The Joker? Oh, fuck. No, Captain Boomerang.
Now, should we speculate who's going to be the new Batman? And
Robin? The thing is, Batman is currently not around. It's very, very complicated. Basically, Batman is effectively dead at the moment in the comics. He does have a son now, who's this guy up here, which is Damian Wayne.
Yes, that's the reason why I bought this comic, because it has my name.
It's going to feel good to have him with the right spelling.
Yes, that's
it. Grant Morrison has been writing for the last few years, and he's been introducing a few things, and one of the chief things he's introduced is this, Damian Wayne, the son of Bruce Wayne, and Talia al Ghul. And Bruce is currently gone, he's presumed to be dead in a big crossover called Final Crisis. They're in the middle of a big crossover miniseries at the moment called Battle for the Cowl, who will be Batman.
Because you know that Bruce Wayne's never coming back.
Never.
No.
They want to make so sure of that, the last page of Final Crisis is Bruce alive. Yeah. Just in case you weren't sure, maybe when he comes back...
Oh my God, Bruce Batman's letters. What the fuck is that?
But the general belief is fairly logically that Dick Grayson, at least for the next year or so, is going to be Batman, and Damian's going to be the new Robin.
They've actually had spoilers already. Some artists posted up artwork and left the name.
Batman 666.
That's Damian Wayne as the Batman in the future.
It's actually quite good. Again, that's the reason why I bought it. Because there's also the number as well. It's time.
Why is Batman so cool?
He's
the question's written right here.
He represents the night. He's dark. It's a sort of combination between the dark. He's dark and black and mean and vicious, and yet he's a good guy.
And he's human.
And he's cool. Human.
That's the other thing. Yeah.
He's very cool.
Yeah, that's cool. He's human, but he does non-human things.
Just this guy, you know. As a coach, maybe if I spent the next 20 years. Really studying in a monastery, then I could be Batman.
Actually, that's Neil Stephenson. Neil Stephenson does a good riff in Snow Crash. It's like, up until the age of 25, every man believes in his heart of hearts that he could just be, under the right circumstances,
the baddest motherfucker on earth.
So what if I just dedicated myself to martial arts and just started cleaning up crime? What if I was dying of AIDS and I was like, I'm just going to rescue everybody? And that Batman represents that, he really does. It's like, well, what if my parents were killed when I was 8 or 32? And I could just be like,
One last thing I really quickly want to say about Batman a while ago, and this is something that's developed, is it's entirely about father and sons. Bruce's career as Batman is motivated by the memory of his father being killed. He's now the adopted father of Dick and Tim. Alfred acts as a father figure to him. Mm. Commissioner Gordon on a level acts like a father figure to him. You've got Gordon and Barbara Gordon as a father-daughter relationship. It's that whole father's thing just seeps right through the comic.
And a lot of his villains are like bastard sons of Batman. Like twisted, broken, and wrong, and that's why he doesn't kill, but also he really wants to help him out, really. When he's done beating the living tar out of him.
Do you have anything to add?
I think just Batman will be, people want to read him because they just want to see what happens and how the character develops, and also the relationship of everything, the city, the people, the police, and particularly the villains, how they psychoanalyze Batman and vice versa.
Where did you get those wonderful toys?
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.